You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show. Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. Hi, folks, and welcome to the show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet we call Earth, thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Those of you who are joining us for the very first time tonight, a special welcome to you. I'm delighted you're here. And I hope you make yourself at home at the website, kevinsmithshow.com, and make a habit out of coming. I think you will enjoy your visit here tonight, and you'll want to make this your home every night. If you are new, be sure you subscribe to our free weekly newsletter. It goes out every week, actually every weekend, and it doesn't cost you anything to get it. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to, so there's really no reason not to do it. No strings attached. Absolutely none. I've been getting a flood of email from people who are highly suspicious. I haven't been getting email from a flood of people. I've been getting a flood of email from people who are highly suspicious of the space shuttle and the International Space Station, and believe very strongly that it is involved in some sort of either weather modification or something nefarious. And I'm not new to that. I have heard it before. It's not something that is new news. But I have never yet seen any evidence other than just suspicions. Never seen any evidence of it. And I wonder if you have been getting those emails, and I wonder if you have seen or heard any actual evidence of it. I haven't. And so the reason I bring this up, one of the emails asked me why, with an audience around the world like I have, why don't you say something about this? Why don't you bring this story out? Well, the answer is it's not a story. That's the answer, pure and simple. Plain and easy, that's the answer. It's just not a story. It's a rumor, and the people who recite the rumor, I think it's incumbent upon them to bring the evidence. Remember those commercials that used to be on television where the little old lady went into, I think it was McDonald's, it might have been Burger King, I can't remember, one of the fast food places, and ordered a burger, and they brought it to her, and then she lifts the bun up and looks inside and says, "Where's the beef?" Remember that? Well, that's kind of how this story is. It has come to me. I've been getting emails about it. I've looked for evidence, and my question, where's the beef? Where's the evidence? Now, we're not going to be talking about that tonight. Tonight, we're going to be talking about anomalous features on the moon, and there's a new book that's out all about that. It is a fabulous book. It's picture after picture after picture after picture. Some of those you'll get to see tonight, right here at the Kevin Smith Show, as we talk with the author of that book, Alan Sturm. We'll be back right after this. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steeleye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. Okay, folks, this is what you've been waiting for, your vacation of a lifetime. It awaits your arrival down under in beautiful and historic Hobart, Tasmania. And to make sure your holiday really is a dream come true, you'll be staying at the Bath Street Apartments. Here are just a few of the things that you'll enjoy in your home for the holidays. Stunning water and mountain views from all windows and from your own private balcony or veranda. Modern furnishings, a full modern kitchen with all new appliances, oven and hot plates, fat-free grill, full-size refrigerator, large-capacity microwave oven, cappuccino machine, dishwasher, and enough crockery, cutlery, and utensils to satisfy anyone's culinary desires. The lounge room has an extensive range of electronic home entertainment equipment, including, now get this, a big-screen TV, free digital satellite, pay TV on Foxtel OnStar with over 60 channels, DVD, video, wireless broadband connection, free local telephone calls from the in-room telephone with your own private telephone number so loved ones and friends can call you directly. The bathroom? Wow, the bathroom has a large spa bath, separate shower cubicle, ceiling-mounted heat lamp and fan and hair dryer, and it just gets better and better. Folks, you've got to see Bath Street Apartments. So click the banner over on the Kevin Smith Show website or just go to bathstreetapartments.com.au. Your dreams are awaiting your arrival. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles and free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today. As you know, on this show we talk about quite often anomalous things that we find in photographs supplied by NASA, and even some in the photographs that you can get from the European Space Agency, which are light years better. They are just so much more clear and well-defined than the photographs that we get from NASA. Nevertheless, the NASA photographs have lots and lots of strange things in them. And my guest this evening, Alan Sturm, is an expert with photographs, and he has put together a book of photo after photo after photo of anomalous things that he found in NASA photographs. Alan Sturm from Tucson, Arizona, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you for having me.
Alan, the title of your book is ULOs, Unidentified Lunar Objects Revealed in NASA Photography. And let's just sort of introduce you to the audience so we get to know you a little bit, and then we'll dive off into the book. Tell us a little bit about who Alan Sturm is. What do you do?
Well, during the day, I'm a graphic designer and web designer, and I also teach 3D modeling and animation. And then my evenings, I am a lunar anomaly hunter.
Okay. Now, when you started putting this book together, it's my understanding that you really did not start, you didn't have in mind that you were going to do a book on lunar anomalies, but just photographs from the moon.
Right. When I had this idea to do a book a lot like Michael White's Full Moon series. You know, with all this new attention on the moon after 30 years of thinking it was just this dead rock, I thought it would be very interesting to create another book of the actual photos, that the photography, you know, the film photos of the moon, and publish that as a book, you know, kind of like a, well, I don't know, just another look before we went back with all these robotic missions, you know, taking digital pictures everywhere. And it was then, as I was adjusting these pictures for print to be in this book, that I started to see all these strange things.
So it was kind of an accidental discovery for you.
Sure. You know, I had listened to other radio shows, and I'd seen stuff on the moon, and it had always been interesting to me over the years. You know, I just always figured that somebody else would be finding this stuff out. Somebody else would be picking it apart and analyzing it. And I never expected to find anything myself. Matter of fact, of the few times that I went and looked up other people's photographs years back, you know, I could never find those resources or those original images. So, you know, it was just a topic that was out on the side for me. And
what was the first thing that you saw that really caught your eye? What did it appear to be to you?
Well, the very first objects that I saw were from the lunar orbiter photos. Now, these are mapping photos looking straight down at the surface of the moon. And what I was finding were very odd-looking shapes, but odd in that they didn't look like they belonged on the surface, like nearly perfect white hexagons sitting on the edges of craters and tall, beehive-looking shapes that were poking up, casting long shadows. And that kind of got me a little more interested to look a little deeper.
All right. How many photographs? Now, let me tell you this. The way that, and the audience needs to know this, the way that I came into contact with you is that one of my listeners sent me an email suggesting that I go to your website and watch the movie trailer and or watch the video. So I clicked the link and I watched it. After watching it, I looked at the contact page on your site, and I sent you an email, and then I telephoned you. All that happened immediately after I got the email from our listener. Because you have on your website, and you have in that video, some very, very compelling photographs that very clearly, at least to my satisfaction, show artificiality, In other words, it was not created by geography unless the laws of physics are quite different on the moon. And I don't think they are. So, that's how I came to be in touch with you. And after we talked, you sent me a review copy of your book. And I have been all through the book, and it's just fascinating. People also need to know. Well, you're certainly welcome. People also need to know that Mike Barra, who is affiliated with Richard Hoagland, they write books together, they do research together. Mike Barra has been impressed as well with your book. And,
as a matter of fact, he's even told me that it helps collaborate their evidence that they've been working on, and he really appreciates that independent analysis.
All right. Now, you prepared a page for us. It's a special page that you prepared for tonight's show, and folks, on my website, kevinsmithshow.com, there is a link right beside where the photograph of Alan Sturm should be, but I didn't have a photograph of you, so when I don't have a photograph of our guest, I've got a little shadow in gray, and it's no photograph available. But right beside that, it says website. That's a link to his website. Right beside that link is a link to the page that we are going to discuss tonight. And so I would strongly urge you to go over and click that link. Just go to kevinsmithshow.com and scroll down to where you see the blurb about tonight's show, and then you'll see a link that says sample images. So if you click that, it's going to take you to the special page that I'm talking about. All right, so let's begin, Alan, with this top photograph. It says on the left side, as taken by the author, and the other one says blurred and then sharpened. What are we looking at, and what's the purpose of that?
That's an open pit mine in southern Arizona here. And I was flying with a friend in his plane, and we were taking a tour of the mines all in the Arizona area. And it's a lot. There are a number of open pit mines, and they're pretty amazing to see from up in the air, from a couple thousand feet. And so this is a photograph that I took of one that's just south of Tucson. And what I did here is I blurred the right half and sharpened it, just using standard photo editing techniques. And amazingly, it looks a lot like a lot of the images of the moon, which we'll be talking about here soon. There's a lot of light blooming effect, and there's a resolution loss, but what you can discern from it are the basic shapes, the basic geometric shapes that show artificiality, I guess you could say.
Okay, so this gives us sort of a reference point right here on Earth, and so we can see that if on the left side, if NASA were using the cameras that the European Space Agency uses, that's what it would look like. On the right side is what we get from NASA.
Right, so it's kind of an attempt to recreate the effects of the Apollo images that we see today.
All right, now the next photograph down, what is that?
Okay, now that's a top-down view from Google Earth of that same mine. And on the left box, in the left red box, we have some structures in there, basic structures. We can see some circles, rectangular squares. From the shadow detail, we can tell that some square-like or rectangular objects are on top of each other. And the bottom right picture is a combination of that building merged with lunar orbiter images. So what we have is a composite that's illustrating what the Pima mine facility that we're looking at on the top left would look like after some multiple thousands of years of meteor impacts. And I'm offering this as an example to help not only tune the eyes, but to kind of grasp what I believe that what I've been finding in my photographs are rather ancient.
All right. And let me just go ahead then and jump to this question based on what you just said. It sounds as if you are convinced that there are artificial structures on the moon. In other words, structures that were built by someone.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do. I firmly believe that now. I certainly do.
Before you started work on this book, did you think that was the case?
You know what I expected? I expected Richard or somebody to come out with an amazing photograph of a bright and shiny glass dome, or, you know, that he would eventually get hold of one through his contacts. I would have expected somebody else to have, you know, through secret channels have gotten that information and slipped it out. I didn't expect to see. Matter of fact, my eyes weren't even looking for ancient archaeological evidence. I'm not an archaeologist by trade, and I don't even think that my eyes were tuned like an archaeologist is, where they can be told by, let's say, some local villagers that there used to be a town or something over in this geographic area. And when they walk over there and they see mounds, you know, they've tuned their eyes to try to pick up on what's different and what's the variations of the landscape, so they can identify, you know, where they might start digging. And I had no idea of that at the time. So now, after looking at this and tuning my eyes, again, I'm a firm believer that I think that we're looking at evidence of old stuff.
All right. Now, let's move down. I don't want to move too quickly through these pictures, but I do want to move down to this next one, series of pictures. Explain that to us. There are four pictures grouped together here in the next frame down. And then there are some others that we'll get to, but there are four that seem to be of the same thing.
Right. So what we have here on the left are the hand-tuned, modified images from the original. So we have the black and white. And what I mean by slowly modified is that I slowly massaged in the shadow detail. So what we see there is a little different than what you would see from the straight raw photograph. And then on the right, like I said earlier, that my eyes have tuned into to shape forms. And once you get used to looking at the moon for hours upon hours, you start to pick out these things. I decided to color them in, kind of like you would do with an old photograph, and try to give it color. And I just used basic colors to try to visually separate the different elements. The colors have really no meaning, and those colors are not particular to those objects.
Okay, it's just to help us see them.
Exactly, it's just a visual aid. And I in the book, I have them both for the reasons so that the person can look over on the left or above and see the black and white, and then look back to see what I see. You know, and that opens a lot of room for conversation right there, which I have with some of the people that buy the book, and it helps tune your eyes so that as you're moving through the book, you can look at the raw pictures, or should you download the actual pictures yourself, you can find these things a little bit easier. It's kind of a jump start.
All right. Now, in this particular set of four photographs, it looks like, looking at the top photograph, looks like there is a complex of some kind. And then in the bottom two photographs, you've zoomed in on this sort of central area. And it kind of looks like it looks like a kind of a mushroom-type building, mushroom or dome-shaped building. And then it looks like there is a covered veranda around it. with poles extending to the ground, holding it up.
Yeah, almost like a an old castle fortress wall or something, with buttresses coming out.
Yeah, it could be that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's very large.
Or it could be an old style Sonic with a hamburger shaped building in the back.
Sure. Well, you know, this is great because this is exactly why I put the book together, because I'm looking forward to a lot of people discussing these. And what I see may not be what you see, and maybe together we can, find the middle ground and all settle on what it probably could be.
All right. Now, looking in the top photographs, either one, the black and white or the one that you've added color to, we have, the broad view or the long distance view. And we can see that beyond these, let's look at the colored photograph so I can describe it for the audience. Look beyond the blue buildings. There's something setting back there on kind of a ledge that looks like a big ball.
Mm-hmm.
A big sphere.
Yeah, and you can see that much better on the high resolution ebook because you can zoom in.
Yeah, by the way. That's what I have, is the high-resolution ebook, folks. And you can zoom in and see any part of that you want to. I mean, you got to get it. when you saw this, did the overall impression say to you that this looks like something that was inhabited, or did you say, now that's some interesting rock formations?
No, yeah. When I see this stuff, I think buildings. And with the handful of architecture books that I have here in the house and having attained a level of being able to teach 3D modeling and animation, my mind is predisposed to see things in their basic primitive geometric shapes. And so when I tend to look out onto the landscape, even just out in the front of the house here, my mind, akin to the first Terminator movie, when he walks into that bar and the little lines are automatically being drawn around each person and where everything is, my mind kind of works like that. And when I started to see these things, actually that top photo there was well after I found some of the objects that really compelled me to continue. So when I saw this, I think that as a low profile, large scale structure of some sort, whose form following the function, I don't know.
Well, it looks like we have a couple of entryways. In the lower left corner of the top picture, it's kind of an arched entryway. I think you have it colored sort of a yellowish color. You see one where you can see the entrance, and then you can see the top of another one and part of an entrance. Looks like it's covered up or collapsed. To the left of the archway that we can see, it looks like one that has been filled in with sand and soil or whatever, or it has collapsed. But extending behind that entryway, it looks like a series of tunnels.
Right, and that might be the yellow ones on the bottom left there might be the entrances to those.
Yeah.
Behind there that I chose not to color, and the reason why is because it just wasn't quite clear enough in the photograph for me to fill that in, so I didn't feel comfortable. You know, I'm very sensitive about just painting in anything that my mind wants to, suggest. So I looked very closely to the differences in the gray tone, the tonal value of the pixels. And, if I don't really have any visual data there to connect, like in this case, those two, then I typically do not paint across there.
All right, we have to take a break. And when we come back from this break, we'll continue talking with Alan Sturm and discussing these amazing photographs. These are photographs that NASA has had. He just has a little better eye, maybe, than the rest of us. and found some stuff of great interest. We'll be back right after this. My guest this evening is Alan Sturm from Tucson, Arizona. Alan, before we get back to the book, you sent me a sound clip from Apollo 11. And is this a good time to play that? Is this a good time to address that?
Sure.
All right.
No problem.
All right, here we go. This is from Apollo 11.
Columbia, this is Houston. Go ahead, over.
Roger, no marks on the limb that time. I did see a suspiciously small white object was forward and star.
Go ahead with the coordinates on the small white object.
EZ.37.6, but I am not sure where it is, but it's right on the southwest rim of a crater. I think they would know it if they were in such a location. It looks like their limb would be pitched up quite a degree. It's on the southwest wall of a smallish crater.
All right, the significance of that is that Houston is asking Apollo 11 command module if he can see the Eagle when the Eagle has landed, and have you seen its landing location? He sees something that is a suspiciously white, small object that they ask for the coordinates. He gives the coordinates, and he says, "He said that's perched on the wall of a crater. I think they would know if they were in such a position." So now, why is that of interest to us?
Well, I think bright white objects perched on the edges of craters are something that a pilot's eye would pick out quite quickly. He's looking for the command module down there, and I think
he's looking for the landing module.
Yeah, exactly. He's looking for the landing module, and he sees this object perched up on the edge. Now these craters, even a small crater from his distance up around the moon, is a small nuclear explosion. I mean, these things hit at about 30,000 miles an hour and blast everything away. So it's hard to imagine that there would be anything just perched up on the edge of a crater. And so I think that his eagle eye picked that out. And if we tie that into what I've been finding in my book, we might be looking at something that was placed there after the fact, after the crater was already been formed.
Okay, so let's go back to this special page that you've created for us. And by the way, thank you for doing that. The next two pictures, it's one photograph that's black and white, and then the colorized version on the right. When I saw this, I saw it in your book, and when I saw it, the very first impression I had is this is a gigantic turtle with about 100 legs.
Okay.
That's what it looks like. It looks like a huge turtle with about 100 legs.
Right, and on the front side, to me, it looks like, the front side being closest to us, it looks like it's rather embedded into the landscape, that mm-hmm. maybe even there's a channel on the sides going, if we use left being west and to the right being east, it looks like it's parked over a channel.
Yeah, it does, and it looks like there's an archway entrance, kind of a cave-type entrance, using the analogy of the turtle, the front two legs on the left side go off into that channel as if they were tunnels or pipes going off into that channel. What do you make of this dome structure that's on the top of it?
You know, I can't quite get a total grasp on it. I'm imagining that if it was made of glass or some other refractive material like that, that we're not getting a clear picture reflected back of what the actual shape is. I noticed there on the left side there seems to be a darker area that's inset from the outer circular edge. So you'll see like a darker blue area. And I'm not quite sure how to take it. It does look dome-like, though, for certain. And maybe what we're looking at is something inside that dome. I'm stepping back from the computer screen right now, and once again, just having another look at this, it looks like there might be something rectangular positioned inside of it, for all I know.
If you focus your eyes in such a way as to imagine that there's a sort of a bluish glass covering and look through it into the inside, it actually looks like an Airstream trailer.
Yeah. And who would have think that they'd made it that all the way to the moon?
Yeah. But, it's kind of that shape, or maybe sort of a trolley car shape. You know? It has at least three little bumps on the top sticking up. There's one little darker area near the back, maybe a doorway. I don't know. That is mysterious.
There's like a sloping edge to the right side there within the spherical blue area. It's kind of sloping down.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I find a lot of that kind of sloping slab-like effect, especially in a lot of Apollo 17 photos.
Well, I don't know. Maybe maybe that's the control center for whatever type of factory or whatever type of operation that is. Maybe that's the little control center for them.
Yeah, you know, Kevin, I think that if you've got the ability to travel between planets, you've probably also got the ability to manipulate natural resources rather well. So I've often imagined, one thing that's odd about these is when I say structures on the moon, or even if somebody finds my YouTube videos, I think that there's a disconnect because they're looking for New York City. They're looking for the big tower in Seattle. They're looking for things that we would normally construct. And that's very different than from what I find on the moon. Just strict definition of the geometries and the architectural and engineering designs, they appear structural. And so it does take some time to tune your eyes to kind of pick up on these things. And when you look nearby, like this dome here, you know, you just see rolling terrain. And once you spot this thing, I mean, it stands out like a sore thumb. And that's the big question is, you know, what is it? To us, it looks like a dome with these kind of pillar-like shapes or flower-like petals sticking around the outside of the dome. And, you know, if form follows function, which is probably a law throughout the universe, whatever the purpose of this structure is and where it's placed in the landscape may not look visually like what you and I would be used to.
Well, the next picture does look more like a building, similar to what we would expect. It kind of looks like, it looks have you seen grain silos?
Oh, sure.
This looks like a couple of grain silos stuck together. It's got some kind of an extension above it. I don't know. What do you think it looks like?
Well, to be specific about this image, now this is an Apollo 8 image. And the Apollo 8 images that I can get hold of, even if I get hold of so-called uncompressed ones, they're of compressed earlier versions, I find that they suffer a lot from artifacting. The digital files are artifacted. But what we see here, really, you have to abstract this shape. So that blue-like shape sticking up, we see a dent down the middle and maybe like a pipe-like, a vertical pipe-like area to the right. That could very well be the result of the damage done to the file from heavy compression techniques. So what we really need to focus on here is that we have a vertical object that is casting a shadow up onto what appears to be a terraced wall there.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, when you see in the book the neighboring photos in that area, you'll see what appears to be kind of a rough textured dome sitting behind that terraced wall. So, you know, to you and I, this looks like fantasy castle tower on the edge of a wall or grain silos. What it could be, you know, I wish we had better photography.
Well, one thing, though, that we can see, and you have it colored brown, is a rectangular area that appears to be stair-stepped or terraced in the lower left of the mm-hmm. photograph. And at the corners of it, it appears to be buttressed.
Yeah, it sure does. Yeah, it looks like a hole, and there's a central area there that I left uncolored looks like a quadrangle.
Yeah, yeah. The shapes just don't look like something that would naturally form as a result of geology.
Can I speak on that for 1 second?
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got a surface of the moon that is...
Let me interrupt you, because I don't want you to get into it and then get cut off by the break that is about to take over. So we'll come back to that, and right after this break, I want you to address that.
Okay, cool.
All right, we'll be back, folks, more with Alan Sturm and these amazing photographs from the moon. It just ain't natural. Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com. We are back. We are talking to Alan Sturm about these photographs from the moon provided by NASA, most of them from Apollo 14. And I had just made the comment that this does not look like stuff that geography or geology produces. It doesn't look natural. And you were about to comment on that when the break took over.
Right. What I wanted to speak about is that, and this is something that I had to go through when I had the pre-release book party where I had architects and engineers and all kinds of other people like that looking at these images, and I was looking for their opinion, and I had to kind of reaffirm with them or suggest to them. Oh, I'm losing my words. I had to re-educate them on the fact that the moon doesn't have the effects of Mother Nature. Mother Nature's effects were long, long ago, 3.5 billion years ago. Since then, it's been pretty much set in stone and been having nothing but a constant meteoric bombardment. So the moon should look like nothing more than a World War II bombing run. And I had to explain in ways, I had to use analogies like sandblasting wood reveals harder material and like leaves the grains. And on the moon, that could happen, but the geology of the moon, the actual lunar soil and the top surface, is simplified compared to the complex geology and elements that we have here on the Earth surface. So down here we get things like Devil's Tower, Monument Valley, and these sorts of things. And up on the moon, there's really no way to sandblast away a shape like we were just talking about, this kind of grain silo looking thing along a wall. So either that had to have been formed at an early geological time frame, and left untouched, never affected by any impact, whether direct or nearby, or their structure, because we just don't get that same effect that we see here on Earth on the moon.
Well, sense? If they are telling us the truth about the moon, it has no atmosphere, it has no wind. So there's no erosion caused by wind driving sand and doing sandblasting, as you talked about. That doesn't happen. There are no rivers, no lakes. There's no evidence of volcanoes. It is not geologically alive.
Yeah, it just doesn't add up, does it?
No, it doesn't. What are we looking at in this bottom set of pictures?
Now, that's a very interesting photo. This particular photo is a big, flat landscape on the moon, and that's just an enlargement of one area. And now what I see there is a collection of geometric objects built up around that central crater.
Mm-hmm.
And most interestingly to me, and you can definitely see this when you zoom in on the ebook, is the blue, almost nut-shape object that's what's that? 9 o'clock, the 8:30 position of that circle. It's perched up. It has a shaft-like shape coming out that is casting a shadow, and that's what struck my. That's what really pulled my attention in right there on that spot. And it helped me kind of realize the greater collection of pipe grids and whatnot going on in there.
This doesn't actually look like a crater.
Yeah, it's tough. Not only that, look right up to the top left. There's like an elongated ridge or like a trench.
Yeah.
And you can see the bright highlight against the back wall there. And then directly to the left, I don't know if you noticed, but just outside of this collection, there's a funny-looking black square.
Yes, there is. Now, up on the hill, it looks like a hillside above it. Maybe it's not a hillside. There are some shapes that look like it could possibly be some buildings up there. Right on that ridge line, it's kind of shiny and rounded, and there are two shapes that are sort of rounded there. The one on the right appears to have a little dome on top of it.
Mm-hmm. There's the whole area. I purposely did not, early on, my lovely test subjects, my friends and family, I would send them images where I had colored everything or I had outlined everything that I could, and their eyes were just, you know, they're just buzzing. They couldn't stop on anything. And so I just chose to highlight the strongest images. And yeah, you're right. It looks like there's another collection of oddities right up there above that that area.
Mm-hmm. And below. If you look at the one that you've colorized on the right, it looks like there is going off or coming up from that central hole in the ground a blue pipe maybe going into a rounded structure, and then it comes out of that and goes down into what looks like a drainage pond.
Yeah, sure does.
That's what it looks like.
Yeah, I really wish we had better photography, and this is probably some of the best that I can get of this area. I had to do a lot of begging and pleading and kissing ears and shaking hands to get a lot of these images, especially the Apollo 8 images.
Kissing what?
Where I kissing ears.
Okay. All right.
But, so, you know, in order to get some of these images, not in a heavily compressed form. Or getting custom scans because, you know, the moon is dead. The moon, why are you paying attention to the moon? Everybody's interested in Mars. So, or the shuttle. And, you know, so it's a dusty subject to even those that archive the images. So I usually had to request things who got them from somebody who got them from some other official agency and forwarded them all the way back through me. And I'm so appreciative of those people taking the time to do that.
Up above that drainage pond that I mentioned, it looks like there's a cliff on the, we'll call it the north side of that pond. And up on that cliff, there appears to be some type of a large structure up there.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about the whitish area, like almost a diamond shape at the top?
No, I'm talking about, you look at the drainage pond that I talked about.
Uh-huh.
It's the dark area on the right that has kind of an island in it. Okay.
Oh, right. Yeah.
All right.
That straight line ridge line in there.
That ridge line looks, you've got it colored yellow, looks like it has a large structure perched right up there on that cliff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sure does. And that's a key. You keep saying large, and I'd like to reemphasize that to the audience, that these are on the scale of very large, bigger than we build. But I feel in my heart, and you probably will agree, that if back in the early mining days, had the miners had the ability, like in the case of the moon with 1/6 gravity, to build giant machines, well, then open pit mines like we see in southern Arizona or elsewhere around the world, they would have been building the biggest machines possible to dig up as much as they could.
Yeah.
And again, if there were entities at one time on the moon that wanted to scrape up some natural resources, I wouldn't see why they would build it small.
Do you have any way of telling just how large these are?
Well, that's the second phase of the research project right now. So what we've been doing is going back through these. And some of the objects are not unbelievably large. Some of the more prominent objects are about maybe 4 kilometers in length. But, I mean, that is pretty large. It's a couple city blocks. You know, if you scroll down,
4 kilometers. 4 kilometers is more than a couple of city blocks. That's about 1.8 miles.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty large.
They can be very large. But this brings up another point, Kevin, is that if you're on an inhospitable surface, as in the case of the moon, right, and you have to take up habitat there because you're going to be spending time, you have to create an environment, a habitat, that will sustain life. That might include atmosphere creation. That might be plants. It might be animals. Who knows?
Might be and a fishing so pond as well. You never know. All right, we have to take a break, Alan, and we'll be back, folks, right after this. More with Alan Sturm and Anomalies on the Moon.
Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
All right, we are back. Let me remind you, if you have not yet done so, be sure that you go over to kevinsmithshow.com and subscribe to the K-Files e-zine. It's our free weekly e-zine, all right? It takes a few seconds, maybe 10 seconds to subscribe, and then you will no longer be out of the loop. You'll be in the loop, and that's where you want to be. My guest is Alan Sturm, and we're talking about these amazing photographs provided by NASA, actually shot by NASA, and they show things that don't seem to be natural stuff. All right, when we had to go away for break, Alan, you were about to make a statement, and I had to cut you off.
That's okay. I could talk about this all night long.
Well, that's good. Go ahead with your statement.
And I invite anybody that's listening to go ahead and email me with their questions, and I'm more than happy to try to respond to everybody.
Yeah. Well, we want them we want them to use the toll-free number.
Okay.
1-800-289-1092. The number is open, and if you have a question or a comment, give us a call. The reason we do that, by the way, Alan, is because it's a talk show, not an internet show. It's sure. Not a chat show. Lots of chat rooms do have audio, but this goes out over the radio as well as over internet, and so we invite people to give us a call, and we have a caller. Caller, your first name, and where are you calling from?
Good evening, Kevin. This is Gary from New York.
Hi, Gary.
Good evening, Alan.
Good evening, Gary.
I've got to say, you've posted some pretty fantastic photos here. And I really think they're all just so open to suggestion. I can see a lot of the things that you guys described. And I keep looking at them, and I can see things in them that I say, wow, that's... particularly the one that Kevin described as a turtle with many feet or legs.
Yeah. What do you see?
I can see a shell on a mammal. If you look at the dark nose, if you look at the almost the ear-like structure right off of the shell, and the dark, as the way Alan covered, colored him in, it looks like fur. They're just so open to suggestion.
Yeah, but you have to keep in mind that you're looking at something there that is gigantic. It does have the general shape of some type of a strange animal, but what you're looking at is gigantic.
Yeah, I appreciate that, and like I said, these photos to me are just so subjective. If somebody is persuasive enough, I think you can see whatever somebody would project you to see in them.
Well, I think that's true, but one thing that we can all, I think, agree on is geology doesn't do that.
Oh, I agree, and I just wanted to call in and thank Alan for putting this out there, and it is fascinating.
Yeah, it's some stuff I've never seen before. Alan, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I found from, again, my poor test subjects before I even put the book together, that some people see just two-dimensionally on these pictures, and I try to stress that the frontmost or the bottom edge of any of these enlargements is closer to the viewer, and that the back is further away. And once they tune their eyes into looking at it like that, like as if it's a landscape shot, and look into the photo instead of at it, they tend not to see it in a graphic design two-dimensional sense. They start to see it as a landscape of geometric features. And that's exactly why, and this is a good point that Gary brought up, this is exactly why I left the black and whites there, so that everybody can have a look at the mostly original version as well as my colored version. And it is my opinion. I can't go up there and poke it with my finger and say that this really is a structure.
Well, I can appreciate that, but on the other hand, I don't know of any geology anywhere that creates some of these shapes. Look at the picture that he was talking about, the one that I said looks like a giant turtle with many legs.
Mm-hmm.
All right, look at the black and white. Look how diffused and fuzzy the what would be sort of the edges of that dome. Look how diffused and sort of fuzzy and foggy that is. You could almost make a case that that is some kind of building inside of that, and that may be some type of a force field around it.
Mm-hmm. or glass. Glass is abundant on the surface of the moon. And a matter of fact, you can look up in the patent office online, and you can find the patents for converting the lunar regolith and extracting the glass material out of it, which naturally has ultraviolet and X-ray radiation blocking properties.
Say that again. It naturally has X-ray and...
Yeah, and solar radiation reflection properties or blocking properties. It's kind of a green glass, and it's a natural quality when you extract the glass from the lunar regolith that you get. You can just create. As a matter of fact, there's patents for it, and they're looking to use these patented systems, creating devices that NASA wants to use to build in situ on the moon for these very purposes. And I think that those qualities of the glass start at something like 3 millimeters. So if you made it pretty thick, we might be looking through, glass here, just as a natural protector from the universe and the sun.
You know, if you look at the bottom, let's assume it is glass. Look at the bottom of the glass in the blue. It's easier to see. It's not circular. You have a kind of a almost straight edge closest to you that turns the corner and almost straight edge across the back of this turtle, moving up towards the right. So it's kind of shaped like a bread loaf.
Mm-hmm. And the outer perimeter might be like a rounded pentagon shape.
All right, let's take a look at this lower picture that we were talking about before the break. We were talking about the picture that it's got a cluster of what looks like structures around a central, for lack of a better word, crater, but it doesn't look like a crater. It looks like a hole that just goes straight down.
Right.
And it's a big hole. When you zoom in on that right side, that's that big circular donut over there that's got a extension coming out of the front and out of the back. It's blue. It almost looks like there's a cross shape right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And when you zoom in, there, what do you see?
Yeah, when I look at this picture, I see those angled edges of like a like somebody had taken a hacksaw and cut off a bolt, or cut across a bolt. And on that left side, I see a little shaft sticking out. There's like a dark area. Now that dark area is probably not a hole, and probably more the effect of just the lack of exposure on the film. Because when I adjusted or enhanced the contrast levels, it probably deepened. But it certainly looks to me like there's a little shaft sticking up there. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay,
now let's go to the very bottom picture. And this has, you've superimposed a sort of a graph on top of it. Explain this to us. What are we looking at?
Okay, so the next group, what I took is... one of the clusters of the ULOs on the ebook page 66 and 67, and what I found, what I identified were the general lay of the land, so I could pick up on the perspective angles from the camera, and then I straightened it. And what's important to note here is not necessarily whether or not I faithfully reproduced it in its original ratios from a top-down view. What I'm analyzing here are the ratios between the objects. So what I'm looking at, or what I'm looking for in this case, is if there's any signs of intelligent design. Excuse me, not intelligent design, but that it was created by somebody with intelligence, not necessarily from geological features. And what's important to note here is that geology is typically worn away, beat away on the moon. Mankind or intelligent species design with aesthetics. And one of the aesthetics that we design with is common to nature, and that is known as the golden ratio. A lot of the buildings in the Greek period were built using these ratios, these design standards. And so when I started laying out the general shapes and started identifying the general shapes, I noticed right away that this particular object is not only symmetrical in its shape, but all the elements of the collection of these objects also have a relationship of the golden ratio to each other. And that's pretty significant.
There's a Y-shaped structure. And that's what you've overlaid with this, it appears to me, that's what you've overlaid in a top-down view with this graph that shows us the angles and the degrees of angle and so forth. And one would expect that this Y-shaped structure, if it had been done by geology, the one side would not match the other side symmetrically.
Right.
And so what you're saying is that it does.
Well, yeah, it certainly does. That's what I used as the point of reference. That Y shape is what I used to as part of straightening out the image. So when that became straight, then I analyzed the rough shapes or dimensions of the other collection of the objects, and together they pretty much make up a design grid, no different than an architect here would use, or an engineer would build using, you know, using the grid systems, the Swiss grids, and these sort of features.
All right, we'll come back to that photograph. Let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Yeah, this is Trey in Atlanta.
Yes, Trey.
Yeah, look, I'd like to ask, I guess, both of y'all the same question. Looking at lots of different things that NASA has released, all the way to stuff about Mars and the Moon, one of the things they mentioned, I think it was some article you had on your show, Kevin, about them saying that storm clouds on Mars, weather on Mars, and they said, of course there's water on Mars, like we had always known that, like they had told us that years ago. And, yeah, I remember that vividly. And I was wondering, do you think maybe that this is probably the beginning of the disclosure process will begin with them saying, look, you know, we found proof of a past civilization on Mars. We've got water there, weather. We found X, Y, and Z on the moon. Do you think this will be, maybe an easier way to, ease those people who live in a separate reality than we live in, those people that think that we're alone and that all these abductees are making it all up and having the same dream, to bring these people into this rather than say, oh, yeah, by the way, aliens are real, they've been abducting us and they fly around and, whatever, doing whatever they want to do, and kind of ease those folks into that before, anything major happens. And that is, if we think we're in control of the whole disclosure process, if the aliens just show up and we don't know anything about it, we can't stop them, well, then I guess, all that, it's too late for that. Well, what do y'all think?
I don't know. What do you think, Alan?
I think that the Brookings Institute clearly spelled out in their report, as Richard has, beat the drum about over and over again, and people just still don't pay attention to it. The think tank sat down and said, what happens if NASA going off to the moon comes across evidence of archaeological remains of past civilizations or of aliens or whatever, or bumps into them physically, what to do? And their appraisal of the situation suggested that NASA would keep a lid on it, given the greater society of the world, their mindset at the time. So, I can side with Trey that should these images suggest prior civilizations on the moon, which would probably lead to us finding out that there were structures on Mars as well, as Richard's been suggesting, that there would be a slow disclosure of this information, and probably a checks and balances on top of that. A natural system that would keep everybody from freaking out. And I'm pretty sure that that's what would happen. I mean, I've had conversations over coffee over the topic of aliens or even my pictures on the moon, and some people just have a mental block. I mean, they just can't even imagine it, can't even openly discuss the topic. And so, you know, you've got Indiana Jones coming out. It's all about aliens. We have various movies, the Sci-Fi Channel. Everything seems to be pointing in that direction, wouldn't you think?
Well, yes, I think so. And I was sort of mentally chuckling here as you were describing the people I call intellectual knuckle-draggers. faced with the evidence, run. That's their that's the way they do it. When they have to face the evidence, run. And deny.
I could imagine, spending 12, 16 years in schooling in my particular field of interest, and let's say it's a science area where it's all based on previous knowledge, and the only incremental progress you have, if you're not a quantum physicist, is to put together something or collect a number of features or principles that others have developed before you. You know, it's the speed of a turtle. And, you know, when you plop down in front of them the idea that the history or the reality of the situation is such, in this case, that we're probably not alone, they shut down. I mean, how can they process that? I mean, I have no ill feelings towards those people whatsoever.
Oh, I don't either. You know, I have no ill feelings, nor do I have any feelings that I need to go easy on them. I think the facts are the facts. And look, a lot of those folks have not figured out yet that Darwin is dead. Darwin is dead, folks. And you need to think something other than his thoughts. He's dead. And you can have your own thoughts now. You're free to do that. This idea that Darwin put forth, I give him credit for at least trying to figure things out and think about it. And but the idea of Darwinian evolution is the basis for a whole lot of establishment science, and it demands lockstep movement. And that's just not feasible, and it's not realistic, and it doesn't address the facts, it doesn't address the evidence.
Conveniently put a lot of things in a box, and anything that's outside the box is then conveniently ignored.
Yeah. When we look at this photograph, the very last photograph, up in the upper right-hand corner, you have the colorized version of the whole complex there. It looks like there's a cooling tower. It looks like there is a vent stack. The back of the building appears to slope down toward the ground. Next to the Y, there is, it looks like a wall that takes a right angle turn, and the cooling tower is up on the top of that. It also, because of the shading, appears to be sloped down towards the ground. And then there appears to be, you've got it in blue, these, it looks like pipes or something coming out of the back.
Yeah, Richard's favorite words, rectilinear geometry.
Yeah. Yeah.
A sloping angle there on the left, you know, like a sloping ramp coming out.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it looks like a factory. It does. It looks like a factory. I'm sorry?
No, I said it certainly looks like it has a purpose. I've not even seen. I've been in the desert now for the last 15 years, And my wife and I go out and into the desert a lot, and just, you know, just walk around, and we pick up rocks and check them out, and they're very interesting. And I don't ever find anything this clearly defined, not even off the side of a mountain, you know, or a small hill. There's never anything this clearly defined in its shape and form.
All right, now, I said that was the last picture. It's not. It's the last in that upper cluster of pictures. But then you have some photographs at the bottom of the page that I want us to get into. I want to take this call first. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Yes, Bob.
I just wanted to say that I've been seeing a few documentaries on TV about the world and where they're going in outer space, and I think that there's a lot going on with helium-3, and I just wanted to mention that and what you guys thought about that within the next 20 years that maybe all the countries will rush towards getting helium-3 on the moon, and that's not going to become possibly one of the most important things possible in our resources. Thank you.
Well, Alan, what do you think?
Yeah, I think helium-3 is the brass ring on the merry-go-round. And if we can get up there and find, at least initially, a cost-effective means of getting it off the surface and back down here to Earth, we're set. I heard something like, I don't know, something like 100 or 200 tons, I don't really remember the number, is enough to power the United States for an entire year. And that could be big money for the people that go and get it, and that could free up a lot of money for us down here to spend on other things.
Well, that is true. All right. Well, and my thoughts on that, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that if there is helium-3 readily accessible or easily mined, all they have to do is figure out a way to survive on the surface and then figure out a way to transport that stuff back to Earth, and we're in business. So, and by the way, China has publicly announced that that is their intention. They have publicly announced that. That is their intention for going to the moon. All right, in the next cluster of photographs, the first thing, the first photograph is of something that you remember years ago they used to have a child's toy. It was a top, and it had a little handle on the top with a corkscrew down through the center, and you push that down and make the top spin.
I do remember those, yes.
That's what that looks like.
Yeah, this is another very large object. And if I was to show you, if I could interactively just show you the original image and just zoom into this one little spot, you'd be shocked that it's just sitting there on the surface. Very little enhancement necessary to make this pop out. And again, at the scale of it, you know, visually it looks like a 1950s UFO. From an infrastructure point of view, it may be the top of a giant vent for some underground facility. I really have no idea, but those are the shape forms that come to my mind.
Yeah, you know, if you look at it, if it is a 1950s styled UFO, then the part that's closest to us has been damaged. On the other hand, it could be that that's just the design of it. It may be a crashed UFO. I'm not saying it is. I'm just speculating. And we're looking at, you know, the front is kind of pointed. And it's got, we're looking at the large windshield. I don't know. It looks like there's some sort of big hub. You've got it colored in light brown. That's sitting there attached to the side.
Well, I'm sure that Gary is still listening in, and if he would look at the enlarged view, the more pulled out view above that, he'll notice that shape is sitting out there amongst this landscape, and the rest of the landscape doesn't look anything like this.
You know, well,
it is distinctly just sitting up there.
When we look at the next cluster of photographs, this really is intriguing to me because this, to me, I mean, when I look at this, I would say, okay, that's it. I don't need to see anything else. That's it. That is a huge complex, and we're going to discuss it when we come back from this break. It looks like a gigantic complex, and it looks like sort of the layout of a small city. We'll be back. Kevin Smith Show audience is anxious to do business with those who support the show. Sponsoring the Kevin Smith Show is just plain smart. Get your free media kit emailed to you today by sending an email to adinfo@kevinsmithshow.com. That's ADINFO at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
Don't forget to, if you haven't done so, go over to kevinsmithshow.com. And subscribe to the K-Files e-zine. Also, while you're there, why not join our members area and get all the goodies, all right? Alan, we have a caller on the line, so let's go straight to the phone line. Caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Gary from Nebraska.
Gary, we can barely hear you. You're going to have to speak up real loud for us.
I'll do my best.
All right, that's better.
All right. Listen, thanks a lot for having Ellen on the show. These are very interesting pictures. One of my problems is I look at stuff and I just really can't see what's there. And you're talking about it, and now I'm really seeing it, and I'm thinking this is really amazing stuff. And if it is what it appears to be, we've got an awful lot to look forward to here in the future with more pictures and better pictures.
Well, I agree. You think that the adding the color makes it easier to see?
Yes.
I do too.
Where the shadows are, the color seems to force us to look at it in a way that isn't. I'm the kind of guy that I can have a deer 100 feet from me and I can't see it. So that's what I'm trying to tell you here. So I really appreciate the discussion.
All right. Man, thanks so much for the call.
You're welcome. Have a good evening.
All right. 1-800-289-1092 is the number to call. Let's talk about this big complex that I mentioned before we went away. For me, this does it, even in black and white. Now, the thing that does it more for me than anything else in that photograph is that central building with a dome, with a big ball on it.
Right.
Now, that's in...
amazing collection.
I'm sorry?
I said, yeah, this isn't a very amazing collection of images.
Well, if take a look at the black and white. If I see a smaller building with a smaller ball on the top or dome on the top, to the left of that central one, to the left and angled down just a little bit. Then at the far end, up next to that lake. I don't know what that is. It looks like a lake over there, but it's got an island in it too. But up next to that dark area, that is primarily rectangular. There's a big complex over there, and it's got a dome on the top of it, a ball on the top of it. So I got three of those in this picture. But the one right in the center, even in the black and white, is too smooth and too shiny and too symmetrical to be of natural origin.
Yeah, especially if you look at the rest of the terrain right there, it's relatively flat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you might want to think that geological processes, like plate tectonics of sorts would be pushing stuff up there. But... that would look more like the inside of a major impact crater that has the terraced walls. You wouldn't get this collection of shapes and forms that they interrelate. When you look at the whole scene, you know, if you were in an airplane and you were flying and your engines were going out and you looked over there, that would look like I better land near that.
Yeah. Not only that, but look at the color side. On the color side, you've got that collection of pipe-like structures enlarged on the left, and this we have a pipe that's running laterally at an angle from the lower left to the upper right. At each place where there is another pipe connecting, there's a little bulb. There's a little bulge in the pipe work. And, that looks like pipes. That looks like maybe some sort of large drainage pipes. But what I can't figure out is it's got some loops in it at the bottom.
Right. Yeah. Well, now, I did consult with a forensics photo expert. And so details that small in these images, when you see a donut shape, can be the effect of the light blooming on the film. It could be the effect of the actual scanner. And I may have darkened something that may not suggest, you know, a clear-cut hole.
So, yeah, but when you see it in black and white, those are there.
Right. And so, you know, just to be clear, and I know there's a lot of listeners out there that know that the reality is here that humans have touched this picture. Unfortunately, the images that come back from NASA are not perfectly exposed. And so they require somebody to touch them up and or to adjust the contrast levels. And in my case, you know, slowly and carefully massaging these contrast levels so that we can pick up on these details, these edges. If you just were to do brightness and contrast adjustments straight up on these images, you'd find that you wouldn't see the same thing.
All right. Let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Mark from Nashport, Ohio.
Yes, Mark.
Hi, Alan. How you doing?
Hi, Mark. Thank you for calling.
Have you ever watched the 2001 Disclosure Project with Dr. Stephen Greer?
I've seen a lot of those, yes.
I don't know if you remember the 12th witness, Sergeant Carl Wolf.
What about it?
Oh, yeah.
Well, he was working in Langley Field there as a technician and had to go into a dark room to repair some equipment. However, there in the dark room, there was someone processing photographs. And on those photographs were very clear photographs of structures on the moon. And if you ever get a chance, watch that, you can see some of the most clear lunar structures that you'll probably ever get a chance to see.
Yeah, now, if he was only just, if only he had a photographic memory and he was an artist.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to ask real quick is, have you ever heard Major Ed Dames talk about what he calls sentient machines that are on the moon?
No, I haven't.
I have. he did it right here.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. Anyway, that's all I had, guys.
All right. Thanks for the call. 1-800-289-1092. And it's not too hard to think about the possibility of sentient machines. Because we're creating them. It's called artificial intelligence. And at some point, if they continue to develop that, the machines will become self-aware. All right, let's move down, and you've blown up part of this structure. When I say blown up, I mean you've zoomed in. And you'll laugh when I tell you what I think I see, but I'll let you describe it for us first.
Are you talking about the two inset pictures on the bottom right?
No, let's move down to the next two larger pictures. We have a looks like a brown or yellow lateral building, and then in blue a smaller building right in front of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I had to describe that in basic shapes that I'm aware of, I would say it looks like a giant tank parked in front of an airplane hangar.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
So you're not so crazy. I think everybody can kind of see this. And when I found this, this is in an Apollo 17 picture. And very importantly to note, this particular Apollo 17 picture has a crater in it that breaks all the rules, all the known geological rules for craters. And that is that the central peak of the crater is taller than the edges of the crater edges, and they don't have any reason why that would be.
Maybe somebody built up the central area.
Could have, and you'll see in the book, if you look down there at the towards the end of the book there,
you'll see some of the other close-ups, it looks like there could be even a bridge-like structure spanning over to the center.
All right, I want to move down to the next picture. And you will laugh when I tell you this one. But go ahead, tell me what we're looking at here.
All right, I'm going to guess what you see. You see a red Batmobile. Is that correct?
Oh, I do now. I had not thought of that. What do you see?
Well, I see, you know, the more and more I look at this picture, the way that you see it now, I colored it that way months back, and even today, this is the great thing about these photos, is the more you look at them, it's a lot like sitting on the edge of a river, looking across the river, and the longer and longer you stare, the more and more detail you actually do see. And I see that those two little spire-like red spots sticking up in the back might be a just part of the collection of objects there parked in front of.
All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to tell you what I see. Oh, it's bizarre. It's bizarre. It can't be. I'll be back with our guest, Alan Sturm, right after this. The Kevin Smith Show has been broadcasting to the world since 2000. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
All right, welcome back. We are on Final Approach. We only have about 10 minutes left in the show tonight. Alan, you know what I see in that picture?
Shock me.
All right. The red object is some sort of spacecraft or aircraft or however you wish to term it. It is facing us. It is slightly at an angle so that the nose of it would be slightly to the right. We're seeing a wing structure and at near the back and two verticals. You're all those little yellow objects. This looks like an airport. Those are the baggage movers, and those are the the little tractors that pull the airplane out of the hangar and so forth, and it's all just parked there.
Yeah, or connexes for storage or something.
Mm-hmm. That's what it looks like. But I want, I'm not saying that's what it is, folks, but that's what it looks like to me. All right, I want to move down to this next one. Because it talks about the Phoenix Mars lander, and it's the title says First Signs of Organic Life. Explain this to us. What are we looking at?
Well, this is one of the first few images that came back from the Phoenix lander, and I was digging around in it, naturally. I was looking, and everybody's pushing this whole idea that this is the mission that's going to prove that there was, at least from the disclosure point of view, that there's at least biological life on Mars at one time. And so I was digging around looking for signs of biological life. And this particular object that I have enlarged on the left and on the top right, the smaller one is the inverse of it, inverted. I think that looks something like a root stub or some kind of flower-like shape, or I'm not really sure. And but what I found the most interesting about it is that down on the bottom right, you see in ULO's ebook on page 111, you'll find a very similar object that I found on the moon. And matter of fact, that's not the only one that I found on the moon. I found probably close to half a dozen of them in various places. So they have similar shape and form, except the one on the moon is on the scale of, kilometers, and the one on Mars that we see here is probably no larger than a basketball. And I find that very intriguing.
Perhaps the difference being the gravity.
Possibly. They talk about here on the Earth that they have silica-based life forms and I think they're silica-based life forms, but some of them grow down nearby the heat vents down in the ocean, where it'd be absolutely toxic to you and I would never suspect to even look there for life, and yet, life grows. And I was just watching a documentary the other day where a scientist was describing that some organisms that grow inside rocks out along these lakes here in America, that to you and I are like stepping into Drano, they exist just fine. As a matter of fact, they metabolize the rust as their energy, and so they grow. So, what could be growing on the moon in a near zero atmosphere? Who knows? Maybe it doesn't need oxygen. Maybe we're just so egotistical to think that it needs to, be like what we see here on Earth before we can imagine, what could be growing to us in an inhospitable area or a zone.
Well, we're told there's no atmosphere. That's the official story. But then amateur astronomers, as well as professional astronomers, have seen and noted clouds on the moon from time to time. You can't have those without an atmosphere.
Oh, absolutely. And NASA has on their website examples of this dust-like
wall of dust that hangs out along the Terminator line of where the light and the dark are coming, the shadow of the sun on the moon. And where that is moving, they think causes a difference in temperature, and it kicks up some dust. Well, that dust has to exist in something, otherwise it would just float out and go away. And so they have photos of it where they suspect this wall of dust, not unlike what you and I experience out here in Arizona, the storms where the dust wall comes flying in first.
As a matter of fact, we had that yesterday. 40-mile-an-hour winds yesterday. What do you think that does to a desert, folks? The desert becomes airborne, and it's a sight to see. These photographs, I've seen some really amazing photographs from the moon. These photographs rank at the very, very top of what I've seen. And I have to say, the one that really is more astounding to me than all the others is that one of the complex with, I talked about the pipes that have loops in it. To me, that just absolutely seals the deal right there. Let's see, how much time do I've got? I can't even speak anymore. How much time I've got? If we go back to that photograph, the small inset on the color side shows what appears to be a door. It looks like a door.
Right.
That small inset on the right side comes from the...
The blue one or the yellow one? Or both?
The blue one.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like a door, and that comes from that building at the north, at the northeast end of that, right next to the lake. And, take a look at that island out there in the lake. There's a structure on the shore up above it, and a bridge coming down the hill and to the island, and there's a dome and some kind of structure on that island.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a collection of elements there. I found in a lot of other photos that you'll see in the book where there are these areas that look like they've been flattened, and they're often circular in form, but they're flat. They're perched up on a hillside and carved in, and then you'll find a collection of objects. And that's not that interesting in a realm where you have random impacts happening and rocks being tossed around for billions of years. It's the fact that they line up and that they look purposely laid out, in radial patterns or forms.
Alan, we are out of time. I want you to, you have a special offer that you're making to our audience tonight. Tell them about that very quickly.
Okay, it's www.lunomaly.com. That's spelled Lunomaly, LUNOMALY.com. It's like anomaly, but Lunomaly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's lunomaly.com/Kevin Smith. That'll take you to this page. And you can get $5 off on the book, on the electronic version of the book. And it's so special to you guys and your viewers and your listeners. I did want to say one thing, Kevin, real quick, and that's that the book has about 216 individual objects. So what we looked at here is just a very small sampling of what I found.
Absolutely. It's one of the it's one of the most amazing photo collections I have ever seen. Alan, I want to thank you for being with us, and man, I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
If you will, just stay on the line with me for a moment. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's a wrap. Tomorrow is Open Line Live, and you can call in and say whatever is on your mind, all right? We'll talk about what you want to talk about. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too, and you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until tomorrow, so long, everybody.